Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised. In our society, most people are content to go through their daily lives safely and peacefully. But our society is not always safe or peaceful. For that reason, some men and women answer a higher calling to defend and protect their fellow man. You probably know someone who is one of these people, or maybe you are one of these people. The ones who see and do the things most people would never want to. These things are sometimes heroic and beautiful, but often they are horrific and terrifying. It's these things they don't share about with other people. It's these things they carry with them, so you don't have to. But when they get together, they talk to each other about them. And they call these stories war stories. Welcome to another episode of War Stories. I am Tom.
And I am John.
And welcome back to just another beautiful day in paradise. Cops and veterans and firefighters reaching out to us from all over the country to share their experiences, tell their stories. We have been contacted. You guys can weigh in on this as listeners if you want to hear it. I think it's interesting, and I'm going to spring it on John because this only happened earlier today. But we got contacted by a listener whose dad was in 18th Street in
18th
the
Streeter.
70s.
You know how much shit he would probably talk about the gangsters nowadays?
Right. So yeah. He goes, you know, my dad was in 18th Street in the 70s if you ever want to talk to him. And I said, what, does he want to come on the show? And he goes, I'll ask him. So I think it would be quite interesting to sit down and interview, because a gangster from the 70s, 18th Street, is different than the guys now. You know, there was a code back then.
Yeah.
And now it's just
respect.
Yeah. But we're not here to talk about 18th Street. We are here with Zach, who is a police officer from an unnamed agency here in Southern California.
Happy 4th, by the way.
A little after the fact. Yeah. I'm actually kind of surprised that we're still allowed to celebrate freedom in this country, because apparently we're celebrating something we no longer have. But, you know.
Yeah. That's a different episode.
That's a whole, well, it's been every episode.
Yeah, that's true, too. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you can, just give us a little bit about your background in law enforcement, how long you've been a cop, and all that kind of stuff without getting too specific, obviously.
Yeah, sure. Well, first and foremost, that Superman tattoo you got is boss.
Oh.
Look at that thing, dude.
Yeah, it's pretty legit.
I just saw that. Yeah. I've been talking to you for 30 minutes. I just saw that.
Yeah, my old drummer did that for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So he's a tattoo artist. Now he's in Austin, but when he comes back out here, he tattoos me. And
awesome.
He's amazing. So I'll post a picture of it if you guys want to see it.
Yeah.
It's fine.
It's solid. It's solid.
Yeah. Jen's like, I see it all the time. Superman tattoo. You're a nerd.
Yeah.
Nerd.
Dude. Oh, no appreciation. No. It's very sad. No, I've been doing this about 17 and a half years. I'll be, well, my start date is in February, so yeah, about 17 and a half. Spent most of my time working patrol. The last year and a half I've been working detectives. The city I work in, we have a downtown area. A lot of bars, a lot of fights, a lot of known for douchebags and douchebaggery.
Come on vacation, leave on probation.
Pretty much. There may or may not be a shirt that says that somewhere.
Well, I went to the academy with a lot of cops from Pismo PD. And
okay.
That was like, you know, during the 4th of July, speaking of which, Pismo's population would go from overnight for 4th of July weekend, it would go from 30 to 60,000 people.
Wow.
And it's if doubles. You got hired by Pismo PD, the first thing they ever told you was, you're never getting the 4th of July off ever. Period.
Yeah.
Yep. Nobody does.
Yeah.
Same,
sounds about right.
Same language, different dialect.
Yep. That's so
same speech I got.
When you're in California and you're one of those tourist towns that you know, they import their assholes.
Mm-hmm.
So
that is very true, because without getting into too much detail, the best part about where I work are the people that live there and the people that work there. They love us. They love their cops. They want their cops to be proactive. They want to be able to come home from working 10, 12-hour shifts or whatever it is they're doing. They want to be able to barbecue steaks and let the kids run around. They want to drink beer.
Right.
and they don't want to be bothered by anyone. So I've had some pretty good experiences when it comes to stuff like that, with regards to our citizens, the people who live there, and I can't complain about that. Very, very fortunate to be where I'm at.
Yeah, so. It's just unfortunate when, like you said, the visitors show up. But you know what? It does. It's helpful that you know the regulars, you know the people, you know the community. So when somebody shows up that sticks out and is causing problems, you can spot them a lot easier.
Yeah, we can deal with it. And then even the locals, they understand the rules too. So they know when they break the rules, there's consequences to be paid. Mm-hmm. And usually there's no issues with that. They, all right, hey, I got caught. Let's go to jail. I'll do my time. We'll come back out. And, yeah, no problems. So it's been a pretty good experience. I got a little burnout working patrol. I did that for about 16 years. And, you know.
Now, is detective a rotational assignment for you guys?
It's, well, yes and no. So our, like our narcs and our vice and those guys, they're in their own little unit. That's rotational. All the other detectives, the crimes against person guys, the economic crime guys, property, all those guys, that's lifetime.
That's their assignment.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I could stay there till I'm done.
Oh, that's nice.
So, and I, for the first time in a long time, I found a home. So I like what I do, and yeah, good time.
Nice. But it's nice when you work in an agency and you find, like for me, that was NARCS, and unfortunately it was a rotational assignment, mm-hmm. but you find a place you're like, I could do this the rest of my career and be just fine. I could, and the only thing I didn't get to do, and I always say this, is the VICAP, the Violent Criminal Apprehension Program, where you just hunt bad guys that are escaping the law.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Well, that's movie shit, dude. That's they make movies out of stuff like that. You know
cool
what I mean?
Shit,
so
you know, I mean, but working dope, you end up, you know, getting calls from those guys, and they're like, "Hey, we need help doing a surveillance, or we need help doing this."
I was going to say, at some point, your paths are going to cross.
Yeah. So, absolutely. You know, I mean, we had a doper who was a wanted shithead, and we teamed up, and you know, he took a butt of a Beretta to the eyebrow maybe once or twice, but admittedly, he was trying to pull it out of the holster, so we just the officer just helped him by pulling it out and hitting him with it.
Well, that's going to happen. So,
yeah. Speaking of things that may or may not help you in uses of force.
So if you're getting arrested, I'm going to tell you right now, grabbing the gun is like at the top of the list of no-nos. And you deserve whatever's coming to you at that point.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, that would be good father advice, good parenting advice, you know.
Starts early, kids.
Don't touch the cop's gun. Rule number one.
Right, rule number one.
Right.
I used to tell my students, because I, like you, so one of the reasons we're having this episode is because you and I both know some of the same people. We both taught arrest and control. We're both well-versed in wristy-twisty. I used to tell my guys when we were going over, you know, protecting your gun and doing all that kind of stuff, I'd say, look, if somebody grabs your gun, it's game on. I mean, tear off their arm at the shoulder and go home and mount it on your wall with a plaque. You know, that's, they're trying to kill you. Cause here's the thing. If you run, I get that, you know, okay. You don't want to go to jail. You ran. I get it. It's a game. We play it. If you plead and beg and cry, or if you fake an illness again, I get it. You don't want to go to jail. If you even try and, you know, bluster and get tough and, you know, I'm not going to jail. You can't make me go to jail. And then hands go on and they're like, oh.
And then they're a limp noodle.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm stupid. You know, I get that too. When you actively try and fight cops who are there to arrest you and could possibly kill you, there is where, like, you've lost me. And I always tell my students, I'm like, that's not a rational person. Somebody who runs from you is rational. Somebody who turns on a guy who's got a taser, a baton, a radio, a bunch of friends ready to come help him, and a firearm, and you turn and you square up and you say, okay, I'm going to fight you, motherfucker, there is something wrong with your brain, because that is not a standard response.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right.
Absolutely.
So, you know.
So, Zach, why don't you tell us how you heard about us and then how we kind of came to why we're talking today and...
Yeah, so one of the things I've been doing probably, for the last 8 years, I'm an ACT instructor. I grew up wrestling. I'm a grappler at heart. I got into submission grappling when I was in the Marine Corps. got into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah, Marine Corps. He's wearing a shirt that says, a giant shirt that says DD214 alumni.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Really? Yeah. Legit. It's amazing. Right. It's like a, you know, just.
It looks like a college shirt or a sports shirt.
You know, you kind of raise a flag to find a friend.
Exactly. That's what that is.
Without wearing like a, you know, Semper Fi, do or die, because I'm not like a moto guy.
No.
I wasn't a moto guy when I was in.
It was
a gig, and, you know, I'm.
We have those code phrases, code shirts.
Yeah, just kind of like, you know, like in a Fight Club when they're sitting in the restaurant and they kind of give them the nod.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's what it's like.
That's kind of what this is.
Yeah, exactly.
Just a little nod.
So ACT, arrest and control techniques.
Yes. So I got into that, started teaching that. I taught in the Marine Corps. So essentially I've been teaching the karate restraint for almost 20 years.
And it's not new.
It's not. It's thousands of years old.
Yes.
It's nothing new. We've been using it for, like I said, millenniums.
Yeah.
Millennia's, if that's a word. But something I'm passionate about. I've used it several times in real life. I've seen it used several times in real life. It's one of the most effective tools that we have.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps people safe.
Yep.
It keeps cops safe. It keeps suspects safe. It's pushing a pause button.
Right.
On anything that's happening. And, of course, you know, with everything that's going on with, you know, George Floyd, with, you know, the protests, and I'm all about people protesting so long as it's legal and safe.
Don't be an asshole.
And people, yeah, don't be an asshole. Rule number one.
Yeah. You know, I want to protest to help this community, and I'm going to do that by burning down and robbing every store and business in the community I'm trying to help.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Good job, dude.
Sure. It's like when the Islamic students threatened the teacher because the teacher said that Islam is violent.
Oh.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Anyway.
No. But so our governor decided to make the call to no more chokeholds. No more to include the karate restraint. Well, that's not a chokehold.
Right.
You know.
We say choke them out. We say it.
It's a phrase. I mean, if you want to, you know, argue semantics about it, okay, technically you are choking off the oxygenated rich blood that flows from the heart to the brain via the carotid artery.
Right.
Okay.
I guess the hypoxia hold, maybe.
But, okay. But you're not cutting off air. You're not. It's not meant to kill anybody.
Nope.
And
very rarely does.
You know, I've done Google search after Google, and I'm sure it's happened. I don't know of an incident in police work.
So LAPD ran into that. They had people they were putting under the carotid, and there was other. But here's the thing: there was always other factors involved.
Right.
So
right.
I, like you say, because the carotid was applied, and then somebody subsequently died, they treat it like, you know, when they statted. Coronavirus, which is if you had it,
it's like,
it didn't matter if you got shot or you got in a car accident.
COVID death.
COVID death, right. Check
it.
So I'm like you. I know people have gotten into situations, and the LAPD even did a study on, and it was by race, because they were being accused of both applying it to African-Americans more and killing African-Americans more with it. And it really didn't come down to that. It came down to some other factors. So yeah, it's dangerous, but if it's really that dangerous, why do they do it in every MMA fight known to man?
Why are 5-year-olds doing it? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and if it's done appropriately and it's trained, and it's not only applying the technique, but also what you do afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
You put the person out, all right? You cuff them up. There's more restraints than just handcuffs.
Yeah.
You know, there's the
the rip hobbles, the...
All of that. Yeah. The bat wing,
mm-hmm.
The arm-leg restraint.
The wrap.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That too, yeah. So there's all these different, you know, tools and instruments and techniques that could be used in addition to that to ensure the safety of whoever it is that you go hands-on with. And to just label this as a killer, as, you know, something just to go out and to, you know, fuck with, use it to fuck with people, it just doesn't make any sense. And what frustrated me was over the last couple of weeks after this happened, you know, of course, the memos come out and the emails come out from all the chiefs from at all the police departments in California, with regard to it. And I'm just like, how are we standing for this? Why aren't we saying anything? How come people who have the ear of those that are important, why aren't they saying anything? Because people are going to die now because of this. Mm-hmm. And so I was, you know, opening my mouth, probably the people I shouldn't open my mouth to. I had a 25-minute conversation with our chief, who, I mean, he sat down with me in the break room over a cup of coffee, and we talked about it. And he didn't disagree, but at the same time, I don't blame him for making the call that he did, politically
speaking.
He
doesn't have a choice.
He really doesn't. He really doesn't.
I mean, he does.
Chiefs only have
as much power as they can muster if they join up together.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And it takes, just like anything big, it takes one. It takes somebody, a male or female, with a set of balls.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I mean? That's a set of balls to come up and say, hey, this doesn't make sense. We need to band together. We need to get the facts out there, and we need to make this right, because cops are going to get hurt, and cops are going to get killed.
Suspects are going to get hurt and killed.
You know, it starts the chain reaction. So you take a tool away. Right. So, okay, I can't use a carotid anymore. So you know what? I'm going to hit him five more times with my baton.
Exactly.
Right.
And then they're going to be like, wait, we can't use a baton anymore, because now look what's happening. Okay. So now you take the baton away.
Okay.
So now I'm going to punch a guy's face in until he's not moving.
Yeah. Cause that looks good.
Yeah. It's just a chain reaction of just things that are just wrong and should not happen.
No.
You'll end up at a place where you have to hand him the handcuffs and say, put these on or I'll have to shoot you.
That you're not far off.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not out of the realm of, especially everything we're seeing now, that is definitely not out of the realm of possibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and I mean, we didn't get into this job to, I don't know about you, I've never encountered an enemy as a cop. You know what I mean? I've encountered people that have wanted to hurt me. I've encountered people that, you know, have broken the law, that were running from me, that fought with me. But I mean, as far as like an enemy goes, I mean, and you know, sometimes we have to use deadly force,
right?
You know what I mean? And that happens. But even then, dude, I mean,
I've encountered combatants, but not
like
good way to put it.
Yeah, you're a combatant, but you're not my enemy. No, I'm here to do a job.
This person's a fellow American on the wrong side of the law. You know,
and sometimes I don't agree with the law. I'm just
absolutely,
mm-hmm.
absolutely. So, I don't know, man. So just. Not having a voice in this is what really frustrated me. And so I reached out to actually before that, I was getting questions, you know, Instagram questions and text messages. People were texting me and whatnot. I'm not like a big Instagram guy. I have like 200 followers.
Yeah, they're your actual friends.
On a private account, yeah. Right. And so I went on and I said, hey, I'm going to go live at this date and time, and anybody that's got any questions about it, you know, everything that's going on, go ahead and shoot, and we'll hash it out and we'll talk about it. And so I did, and it went really well. So I had like 25 people or whatever on, and I got some good questions, and a family member who's left of center, and shall we say, that's, I mean, she brought up some good questions, and was able to really call me out on some things, but I had answers for it, you know?
Right.
And so it just worked out well. And so my old partner watched it, and he's like, hey, dude, you should do a podcast, bro. Do a podcast. I'm like, dude, no, it's not me. And then after that was before they got rid of the carotid. And then afterwards, when I was expressing my frustration with everyone and when nobody was listening, I hit him up. I was like, okay, I'll do it. And his partner, his old partner from his old agency, was on here.
Yes. You know, your friend who turned you on to us is a close friend and former coworker of somebody we've already had on the podcast, Adam, who, if the listeners don't remember, he had was chasing a bad guy who hid in a closet and shot him several times with a .357 Magnum. So that's kind of how you came to us, was through that.
Right.
Small community of we all know each other, yeah.
And if anything, just a platform to yell and scream, hey, this is a solid technique. You know, this works. Here are some numbers, you know. this is what it is. This is what it isn't. And just anyone of importance, or anybody with questions that's unsure about it, right, can listen and just hear the truth about it. Because that one thing that we don't see a lot of is the truth. We don't see a lot of logic. We don't see a lot of reason.
Yeah, because you know, the rule is never let the truth get in the way of a good story.
Right. Yeah, this is true.
And like we spoke before, emotional decisions.
Oh God,
all absolutely emotional decisions.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and that's okay. So everybody, you know, the statue of Lady Justice is wearing a blindfold. Because she's not supposed to be emotional. She's not supposed to. It's supposed to be completely across the board. Everybody, same mm-hmm. thing, you know. But that's not where we're at anymore. Lady right. Justice is peeking out from behind the blindfold to see if you deserve special treatment because of some perceived slight that happened to some ancestor of yours, or maybe happened to you 20 years ago. I don't know. It does. It just makes no sense. Like the state, I think of Oregon, just said you have to wear masks unless you're a minority. And you feel that mm-hmm. wearing a mask is racist, mm-hmm. and then you don't have to. That's the law.
Yeah.
That is asinine. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah. That just came out like a day or two ago.
Yeah. I just found out today.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. What kind of upside down are we living in, guys?
As far as I know, it's a violation of the 14th Amendment, equal protection under the law.
You would think.
But
apparently the Constitution doesn't apply anymore.
Well, so that's the thing. We're getting to a point where this is either got to be tested in court or tested in the street. And I fear that if it doesn't get tested in court soon enough, it will be tested in the street.
100% it will at some point.
Yeah. But so let's talk about the mechanics of the carotid a little bit, because this is kind of our topic for mm-hmm. the show. Mm-hmm. You said you wanted to talk about it.
Yeah.
So you and I, both having been instructors of it, we've received it. Mm-hmm. We've applied it. And the fastest thing you tell all your students, right? You have everybody's paired up. You sit them down. There's a guy sitting in front who's about to get it applied to them. And we always tell them, what do you tell? I'm sure they told you, John, when you feel like you're going to go out, tap. Don't try to be tough and fight it, because you'll end up not tapping fast enough, actually going unconscious and possibly pissing yourself.
That happens.
Yeah. And absolutely. It's
every time.
Yeah. So in inevitably every class, some cop tries to be tough and, you know, he ends up falling over, or she ends up falling over because they didn't tap when they should have, or they didn't realize it. Because for the listeners, what happens is one part of your arm, the forearm, goes over one side of the neck where the carotid artery is. The other part of your arm, the upper part, the bicep, covers the other artery. And as you pinch the sides, not the front, the sides of the neck, blood flow is restricted to the brain and makes you pass out. It's the opposite of hyperventilating to pass out. It's, you know, hypoventilating to it's hypoxia. You just mm-hmm. you still can breathe. You're still getting air into your lungs. In fact, you can talk. There's a little beautiful triangle where my elbow creates about an inch and a half to 2 inches of gap between your Adam's apple, if you're a guy, or your esophagus or whatever. You can breathe. It's mm-hmm. not comfortable, but you can breathe. And the restriction of blood flow is what puts you out in 4 to 6 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah, depending on what it is. I mean, 4 to 6.
I've seen it longer. Yeah, but usually
we say 7 to 10, but I mean, it can be as quick as 4 seconds. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, you know, it's the body's way of just saying, okay, we're going to take a timeout.
Yeah,
I'm going to handle this. The body talking to the mind now. Right. I'll go ahead and handle this right now. We're going to go to sleep for a little bit. And we'll talk about this when,
because apparently you've been making all the wrong decisions up until this point.
Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy. Exactly. Okay, you are no longer in control.
Right. Yeah. His body's, okay, I got this from here.
Oh, no, the pee. We're going to shut down. We're just going to let that go. It's fine.
No, we'll shut down and we'll take care of your breathing. I'll take care of your mm-hmm. your heart rate. I'll take mm-hmm. care of your blood pressure. Everything else, we're just going to go ahead and push pause.
Just it's a timeout.
Absolutely.
It really is a timeout.
Absolutely.
And you know, that's a lack of knowledge that people just think, oh, when you go out, like, how do you breathe? Oh my gosh, you're not getting oxygen. Oh my gosh, you're not getting blood. Oh my God.
It's not a coma where you need a respirator.
No.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. People just don't know.
No.
They don't understand. And lack of knowledge leads to, well, what we have
now. Horrible decisions from emotion.
Right. Horrible decisions.
Right. You're also talking about statistics and numbers and...
Yeah, well, I mean, let's take a look at everything that we've learned in the last, we'll call it 17 years. We'll call it 1993.
Sure.
Okay. 1993, we had the first UFC,
mm-hmm.
and the beginning of MMA was you know, which martial art is the best, you know, and the Gracies did a great job putting that together because they wanted, it was a marketing play for Gracie Jiu-Jitsu.
Sure.
Is really what it was. But you take a look at how much we've learned in the last almost 30 years in hand-to-hand combat and martial arts in general. I would venture to say we've learned more in 30 years than we have in the last 200 years. Mm. And one of the things we've learned is this technique.
Sure.
So that aspect of it is very interesting because if you take a look at what cops were doing before that, it was
the arm bars.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The, yeah.
It was
C clamps and
the ground and pound.
What are they called? Grappling? Oh, it was something grappling. I can't remember what they called it. This is like in the 60s and 70s.
So there was Koga stuff, which was a little bit prior to.
Right.
And then I think before that, it was almost like Greco-Roman style, like wrestling that they would teach. And it was very much based on just athletic, competitive. It wasn't street fighting.
Look at the people that they were recruiting.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, back in the day. They're basically, hey, you're a gorilla.
You were in the military. You were in the military. Yeah. You're over 6 foot two.
Yeah.
You've got
here's
a high and tight.
Here's a badge. Here's a gun.
Here's a badge and gun.
Okay,
and
just
you walking up to the call and people looking at you will 80% of the time make them behave.
Well, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right. But they also know, back then they also knew that if you showed up, you actually brought an ass whooping with you in your pocket that you could hand out.
Right.
This is true. Yeah.
And
respect goes a long way back then.
So, but yeah, then Koga, the Koga style. And he's, what I love about Koga is he's a judo guy.
Yeah.
He's a judoka.
Right.
And so he incorporated a lot of judo. And there's
I have a Koga baton. I love it.
I think it's, I don't know as much about it as I should.
Right.
But from what I have read about the Koga technique, it's cool. And again, I'm a grappler at heart, and I studied judo, and I find it fascinating. But then you have you go into the Greg Dassey era, and I love this story because he recognized some flaws in how LAPD was using force to take people in custody.
It's probably the most and now here's interesting is Greg Dassey. You and I share a connection because we've both studied under him,
right?
And he literally wrote the book on modern arrest and control techniques after an extensive and expensive study by the Los Angeles Police Department as a result of things like Rodney King and as a result of some of the stuff that went down, you know, back in the day when it was shoot 'em, stick 'em, punch 'em, or dogpile.
Yep.
That was it. That was all you had.
And we saw that in 91 with Rodney King.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And what tripped me out about that was if you break down what those guys did what they were trained to do.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right, wrong, or indifferent. Okay, those guys did exactly, other than at the very end, the kick to the head. I forget who was it, which cop did that. But they stick them until they're in cuffs.
Yeah.
That was essentially it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Stick them, back up. If they get back up, stick them
Stick them again, mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what I dig about what Mr. Dassey did was he took that panel that included, I mean, guys like Benny the Jet, I forget which Machado it was, one of the Machado brothers, a couple Gracies I think were on the panel.
Yeah.
Missy Lynn, I don't know if you've ever sat through one of her classes.
I have not, but I...
Dude, she's an attorney. Well, she's a martial artist. She's an attorney. I think she was a cop at one point. Very knowledgeable as far as force goes. Very knowledgeable. She defends. She's not a public defender. She is a defense attorney for police officers.
Oh, good. PDL or
very, very, very knowledgeable. Yeah. Very knowledgeable. They had a physician.
Yeah.
On the
so
panel.
So the CMAT panel is what you're talking about.
Yeah,
the Civilian Martial Arts Advisory Panel, and the CMAT panel was, I think, Dossie's brainchild.
And yeah, it was.
He said, "Okay, he came up, or he had the bean counters at LAPD come up with a way to number use of force incidents and give like numerical values to levels of force, types of fights. Did it go to the ground? Were there punches thrown? Was it a wrestling match? Was the carotid applied? Was it not? Did they use a nightstick? How did the fight start? Those kinds of things. And then in doing that, he was able to look at statistical data on the most common types of use of force altercations that cops get into that either injure the suspect or injure the cop or get, you know, serious. Not like, you know, turn around, put your hands behind your back, fuck you, pull away, grab your arm, put you in cuffs, you're done. Not that. Like
a somebody, fight.
Yeah, mm-hmm. fight.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, he was able to really break it down to some basics of these are the kinds of fights you're going to get into. And from that, he even developed the idea that there are only four basic arm mechanics, or he adopted, I guess, this, because kinesiologists have known this for years. And but basically, from looking at statistical data, when you put your hands on a suspect's arm, they only go one of four ways. Mm-hmm. They stiff arm, they pull towards them, they pull away from them, or they try to pull it up, right? Those are basic. And so in looking at that, then he gets the martial arts panel. And in this martial arts panel, like you were talking, Benny the Jet, mm-hmm. All you know, some of the Machado brothers, all these, like, I think you had
striking,
to be,
grappling.
Yeah.
I mean,
every discipline, karate, taekwondo, jujitsu, aikido, you know, everything. Like, it was 22 different masters from 22 different disciplines that mm-hmm. came together. Mm-hmm. And he showed them all what they had come up with as these are the most common encounters that we get into. Would you go take these encounters and come up with your best, like, method that as a martial arts instructor you would tell your students to deal with it? And then they met, they back and forth, and then they took all these techniques, 22 different techniques for all these different, you know, whatever things, and then they put them in front of doctors, and then the doctors would go, well, that's going to break this, that's going to tear that, that's going to, and then they categorized everything based on the amount of damage a suspect will take from a technique like that. And then they went to the lawyers, and then they said, okay, if we do this, what's our liability? What's our exposure? What's high risk? What's low risk? And then they looked at what can we actually, in all practicality, teach cops with zero martial arts experience in the academy, so when they get out, they have techniques available to them that will get them through these encounters, get the suspect into custody, and hopefully not with minimal injury to either suspect or officer. And then after all of that, they developed a fighting technique and an arrest and control technique, and they still, well, a modified version now, but they still teach it to this day.
And it, the thing is, all solid techniques, they all work.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, they all work.
They all have their application.
He did an amazing job.
Yep.
And it came out in 1990. Ironically, it did come out. I think the final product came out in 1993.
Right.
The same year that UFC 1 came out.
Yeah.
So the amount of knowledge that we've learned from then until now is immense.
Mm-hmm.
It's immense.
Oh, yeah. It's evolved over time. You know? They've added things. Mm-hmm. They've taken things out. And speaking of UFC, the UFC has a very interesting tie-in to the LAPD's martial arts program, which is Big John McCarthy.
Big John, mm-hmm. yeah.
Big John McCarthy, for those of you who, you know, watched UFC back in the day, he was this incredible Hulk-looking motherfucker that would referee all the matches. There was like a couple of them that you would always see, the dude with the dreads, and then Big John was mm-hmm, the big, mm-hmm. like, he looked like Luca Brasi from The Godfather, just this big, hulking, massive, like, sleep with the fishes. You know?
Yeah.
Leave the guns, take the cannoli. He's just a massive fucking mountain of a man. He's also an LAPD arrest control instructor and a martial artist mm-hmm. who actually used to have, I don't know if he still does, but out here where John lives, he had a martial arts studio.
Yeah.
And a fighting studio.
Yeah.
And
for
so,
a while.
So literally, the LAPD was connected into the MMA world to touch and grab and pull from this expertise anytime they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And they developed this brilliant system.
It really is. So the one thing that, well, there's a few things I walked away from with that. One thing that kind of caught my eye was the fact that when they put this out, they said, okay, all this works. However, you have to train this.
Yes.
You have to train this consistently. We recommend twice a week for an hour at a time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't know of law. There might be a law enforcement agency out there that does it.
Nope.
I just don't know. I've never heard of one.
I got lucky if I got an 8-hour class for the whole department every 6 months. That was lucky.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We're lucky enough where we do our advanced officer training. One year we'll do you know, pit driving and pit techniques,
right.
And then next year we do all like a whole day of ACT and a whole day of shooting and tactics and stuff like that. And then every other month is an ACT month, and then in between is a shooting month.
Right.
So.
Which is good.
Still,
it's still not enough, but it's better than what a lot of agencies
absolutely.
Are doing, which is scary.
So, you know, so the other thing was, you know, that, okay, since we're not, generally speaking, we're not doing the 2 days a week, an hour at a time, a lot of those skills are...
they're perishable.
They're all perishable. It's all perishable skills. Mm-hmm. And they're based on the fine motor skills as opposed to gross motor skills. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we started doing was we started teaching, really emphasizing the two-man takedown.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the contact and cover. I mean, basic, one, you know, cop 101 shit.
Yeah.
Contact and cover. Okay.
One guy talks, the other guy tackles.
Exactly.
And the guy who's talking is prepared for the catch.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So there's that. So you have to train it. You got to teach your guys, and you have to train, and you have to be consistent about it.
And the guy who's doing the catching is at the most risk.
Yes, absolutely.
You don't want to take that dude's face to your dome because your tackling officer went a little too hard.
Absolutely.
And I've done that.
It happened to me. Absolutely. It's a contact sport.
It's
contact,
yeah. At least where it gets it used to be a contact sport.
Yes.
It's interesting you bring that up because. What's the research now for instructors? Because when I was going through, we did. I mean, that's one of the reasons I still remember it is because the instructor course is so intense. It's literally as intense as the first 2 weeks of boot camp without the classroom. It's all PT all day, every day, 8-9 hours a day for 2 weeks. And they just hammer you with it. And then at the end, you have to teach. And if you don't teach it right, you fail.
Yeah.
Right. So they encourage you, go back to your hotel, don't hurt each other, but practice. Right. And then you even as an instructor, I still had to recert every 3 years.
I think it's 3 years.
3 years.
Yeah. Something like
and
that.
So I'd have to go back and do 3 more days of getting my ass kicked so I could go back home and teach my guys. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the other issue. Yeah. OK. How many times you do the training and some potato chip goes out for a week? Oh, I did the rest of control training, and my bursitis is acting up now because he hit me too hard.
You gotta know your clientele. That's part of being a teacher. You have to adjust the people that you're teaching.
True, but there's going to be always that guy that's going
right.
to complain.
Yep.
And so the departments are like, well, every time we do rest and control, somebody goes out for a week, so we're going to put it off until we absolutely have to.
And that's what skews. Or that's why I feel like they skew their version or their vision of liability. And this is something that I've said since my prior agency when I was an FTO to where I am now is we need to teach people how to survive, and doing it once or twice a year is not enough.
No,
and when
no.
you don't do it enough, you are now creating the liability.
So and here
100%.
Yeah, and here's the saddest part of that is how often do cops get in shootings? I mean, my dad worked at LAPD 25 years, never shot one person, right? Most cops will go their entire career without ever getting into an officer involved shooting. They might draw their gun, right? They'll threaten people with it, right? But most cops will go their entire career without ever shooting somebody, and yet we qualify. Some agencies quarterly, some agencies monthly, some agencies will do it, you know, every 2 months, you know, whatever. And then they'll do their big annual qualification, but with a little bit of training in between. So we're shooting often, right? But every cop, every shift gets into a fight. If you're not getting into a fight every shift, you're probably not doing your job. Or you work in a sleepy, you know, little town where you get into a fight once a week. And that's cool too. But guess what? You don't get into a shooting once a week. You get into a fight once a week.
Absolutely.
So much time is given to the firearms training. Mm-hmm. And yet the one training that you do more often than anything else is the redheaded stepchild.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, admin is scared.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Admin is scared. I mean, when I teach, I say 20% guys. Knowing that the newer, because I know that, you know.
You tell them 50%, they'll go 75. You tell them 20, you might get 40 or 50.
Yeah, 40 or 50. I mean, but then, okay, so then you got older guys like me. I'm broke, dude. I don't have an L5S1 disc. I don't know where it went.
Right.
I don't know what happened to it.
Just the doctor.
It's just gone. You know, I know some fluid shot out. I had some fluid against my nerve.
I pooped it 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's gone. And, you know, my shoulders sounds like Rice Krispies. My neck doesn't work.
Yeah,
you know.
The snap, crackle, pop my kids hear every morning is me getting out of bed.
Exactly. You know, so but, I'm not gonna go 50%, 100% when I train. I'm going to go 24%. I just want to see these guys get the technique down.
Right.
So there's a way to do
it. Well, and when you pair up your students – if you don't pair them up based on the knowledge that that shit's going to happen. If you pair your hard charger up with your potato chip's going to get hurt. Right.
Every time. Mm-hmm.
If you pair Every your time. If you pair your retired on duty guy with your potato chip, I think they're going to be okay. The problem with that is your potato chip's not going to learn anything.
This is true.
So it's this weird.
You want a good example?
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know if we mentioned in one of the previous podcasts. I'm not really sure. Maybe we touched on it just briefly. I don't know. It might have been about weapons or whatnot. But we had. Long story short, we get a call to a male under the influence, and it's a violation restraining order call. A two-man unit gets there first. I get there, and then another unit gets there. So now there's four officers on one scene to deal with one guy.
Right.
He ends up being high on meth and drunk, but regardless. We walk into a corridor in front of in this apartment complex, and he's standing in front of the door. You have two officers that are making contact with him. They each have an arm, and as they're placing his arms behind his back, I'm stepping in front of him, and I kind of just put my hand on his chest. I'm like, hey, man, just relax. We're going to talk to you. We're gonna ask, are you outside? No sooner did I say that, I get fucking rocked right in the face.
Yep.
And fight is on. It is on. And he had a 12-millimeter Allen wrench that he ended up stabbing a few of us with. When I say stab, I don't mean like actually punctured like all the way through, whatever.
He tried.
So I get rocked.
He forgot to sharpen it.
And fight is on. All right. So out of the four officers that were there, two of us, I'm not going to speak for them, but by no means am I some crazy MMA fighter, like some special martial artist, yada, yada. But
no,
I do
but
train
you're
more,
in shape.
But I train more than the other three. Mm-hmm. And the other guy trains more than the other two. Well, out of four of us, two of us walked away from that. Little hurt, mm-hmm. but all right. The two guys that, in my opinion, can do more, they've been IOD since. For what?
Yep.
Because, in my opinion, they didn't know how to control and handle that situation.
Well, and so muscle memory is a big part of that.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
And if you're saying they don't train, well.
Yeah, well.
There you go.
So, I mean, that's just a quick example of number one, A, how things can go to shit really quick. And two, when you're not training and it's not muscle memory and your brain is not programmed to handle these situations in an instant, and or when it has to revert back in a high stress situation to what is the last thing I remember how to do, if it cannot function in that and know what to do, what do you have now? A giant liability.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so now we're down two guys. Now everyone's covering shifts. Mm-hmm. Now they're paying more overtime. But then they're saying, oh, wait, we don't have the budget to pay you more overtime. So now we're cutting other people. So, and it's just a mess. So,
but they didn't do the arrest and control training because they didn't want to pay the overtime.
Thank you. Thank you.
Very simple. Very simple. You know,
a little bit of pain on the front end saves you a lot of pain on the back end.
Absolutely. And you know, it's training, but it's training the right techniques as well. You know,
training the right way.
Training.
I do believe perfect practice makes perfect.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, training techniques that involve gross motor skills. You know, like I'm a huge, where I'm from, huge believer in the two-man takedown.
Yes.
Huge believer in controlling the hips, figure four and legs, controlling
the
hips.
Shoulders and hips.
Taking back mount. Yep. And going from there, what we used to do was okay. They go people, when suspect whoever goes to the typical put the arms under the chest and not move. Well, back in the day, you'd punch them until you get the arms.
Mm-hmm.
That sucks.
Yeah,
it just
hurts
sucks.
Your hand.
I've seen more people break their hands than I care to remember. Just
but if
you're
smart about it,
sink the carotid.
I'll give you a perfect example too, and it's not even just sink the. I mean, like. They're going to take away other stuff for sure.
Oh yeah,
it's just the tip
of the
iceberg.
That's what people don't understand is once you get the one thing, it's for this, for their agenda. It's never enough. It's never enough. It's never enough.
Ask my kids. They read the book, or I read it to them. If you give a mouse a cookie, he's going to ask for a glass of milk.
that's exactly
a kid's
right.
book. That's trying to teach kids about like not taking too more than your whatever, but that's what they do. Mm-hmm. So here, I'll give you this. I'll go back to, and I've used this example before. As an arrest and control instructor, yes, the bar for me is a little bit higher, and the bar for you is a little bit higher. Mm-hmm. And when we do our use of forces and we would get into fights, I would call out things to people. Get this, get that. I would direct the fight, right?
Yeah.
And I've had cops on my own department at the time call me up, and I would always say, if you need to call me at 2 in the morning, call me at 2 in the morning, even if it's my day off. Mm-hmm. They call me. And he goes, okay, So I'm writing the report, and here's how it went down, and this is what I did, and I remember you taught it to me, but I don't remember the name, or I don't know how to articulate it, or whatever. And so I would listen to, you know, how they went through, and I would identify the techniques they were using. I'd tell them on the phone, and then they could write their report accurately, because I wanted them to be able to, in a report, articulate technique, not just asses and elbows. So that was fine. But then I watched a video, and it was right after I retired, I think. Do you guys remember the Asian doctor that was on a plane and he refused to get off? And it,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember that.
So this made all the news because it was caught on a cell phone camera, and the guy was legitimately being an asshole, right? And the pilot said, get him off my plane or we don't take off. And so the stewardess says, sir, you need to get off the plane. The airline security, sir, you need to get off the plane. He's some entitled asshole who thinks that the pilot doesn't have the right to dictate whether he's on the plane or not because he bought a ticket. Fine, we've all dealt with those people. They call airport PD, and it might even have been local PD, but I think it was airport PD. The airport had its own police department. They came over. They told the dude, you have to get off the plane or we're going to arrest you. And he was like, you can't make me do shit, basically. And so they said, well, fine, we're going to arrest you. And when they went to get him, he got a little bit combative. But remember, he's sitting in his airline seat, and they're standing in the aisle. It's tight quarters anyway. And he smashes the dude's face into the seat in front of him, the cop does. Just wham, hits his face in the seat in front of him and knocks him unconscious, I think gives him a bloody nose. And then all the cell phones are capturing these two cops, you know, carrying this unconscious doctor with a bloody nose off of a plane, and it's all caught on cell phone with him slamming his face. And so I had, at that time, it's kind of like you're talking about when your friends hit you up, they all hit me. So what do you think of that? And I'm like, well, I mean, he deserved it, and they had every legal right to do it. Yeah. They had a legal right to get him off the plane however they wanted to. They had to take him into custody. He wasn't standing up. It is what it is. Whatever force that's reasonable and necessary. They didn't kill him. They didn't murder him. They didn't.
Does it meet Graham versus Connor?
Right. Yeah. So they said, okay, so you would have done that? I said, well, no, that's not what I said. And they go, what do you mean? I said, oh, I'd have made that guy get off the plane, and he would have done it on his feet, and he would have done it. He would have done it conscious. He just would not have liked the trip. Like, what are you talking about? I'm like, small joint manipulation, wrist locks, twist locks, you know, pressure points, all that kind of stuff. Ask my kids. Ask my kids what happens to them when they act a fool in public. And I just make this three-fingered claw position with my hand, and they know that the thumb could press below the back of their earlobe, right where their salivary gland is, or right up into their brachial nerve plexus in their armpit. And they know the kind of pain that a pressure point like that can do, and it will look like nothing's happening to them. They'll just look like a crazy kid screaming in agony for no reason, and I'll look like the greatest father in the world because I'll be going, what's wrong? What? Hey, let's go over here. Let's go over here and talk about it. Are you okay? And they know. That's what you can do with training, with technique, and with practice.
There's a caveat there. You got to have all three of those.
You got to have.
You got to train. You got to. Your technique has to be solid. And you have to continue to train.
And how do we train for things that get taken away from us?
Well, you can't. And I'll add a fourth one to that. And this is where I go back to, and we bang this drum all the time on the show. And your dad and Elliot, just mindset is a big part of it, right?
Oh, it's huge.
Mindset is a big part of it. I worked with a cop, loved him to death. But when he would show up, people would go through the roof. He would show up, and the guy would be code four, you know, totally complying. And then he'd show up, and the second he would show up and say, open his mouth, the encounter went through the roof, and the guy would fight. Because the energy he put off was this, I dare you to challenge me. And it was because, you know, of a lot of factors, but that's just the vibe he would put off. Now, I'm an arrest control instructor. I'm not, you know, yeah, okay, I don't want to get hurt, and I don't want you to get hurt, but if it comes down to getting into a fight, I know I'm going home at the end of the day, and you're not. I'm not worried. And I would show up, and I'd be very calm and just waiting for it to go to shit. And when I would show up to the call, everything would get really calm, and everything would be really cool because my mindset was such that they were like, okay, everybody else seems to be getting upset and freaking out, and this dude's just standing there staring at me with a cold face saying, if this shit goes sideways, I'm fucking you up first. And that is a mindset. Mm-hmm. That's nobody says anything. And it's not about, like, if you go in there with your chest puffed out and you go in there and try to act tough, you're going to get a tough guy challenging
you. It's a vibe.
It's a vibe.
You know, and that's a real, I don't know what the science is behind it.
No, I don't either.
Okay.
There's a fucking pheromone. Is it a smell?
It's a real thing.
It is a real thing.
And anybody that talks to people for a living, which is what we do. We're professional people talkers.
Yeah.
We should
get honorary psychology degrees after 25 years in the street.
Absolutely.
Sure. I agree.
And there's a vibe that you can put out just by walking up to a person.
And you know what? There was a book that I read overseas that had to do with the psyche of criminals and police officers and how there's a very, very, very thin line between the psyche. And so, you know what? Maybe they can just tell. They know, just like we know. And we can tell. Yeah. We know when people are going to run. We know when people are going to fight. Yep. We know when people are going to lose their mind. We know when people...
You know what? You're right. If they contact cops that often...
So if we could see them coming from a mile away, how come they can't see us coming from a mile away?
I got a little story about that. So my dad, my brother, and I are traveling up north to Sonoma County, and we pull off, and my dad decides to take that we're going to take the back road, and I'm driving, so I'm like, all right. And we come across this bar. It's literally in the middle. There's nothing around. It's a shack that's a bar, and it was empty. There was one motorcycle that was parked out in front, and so my dad's like, hey, let's go get a beer. I'm like, hey, why the hell not? You know, when am I going to be here next? So we go in and cool little bar, order a beer, and there's one guy in there, and he's sitting there, and he looks at me, and I look at him. He knows I'm a cop, and I haven't shaved. I'm dressed, you know, t-shirt, just dressed normal. I don't wear a shirt.
You're wearing a code shirt for your military service.
I'm a proud cop.
Nothing like that.
You're not wearing Sheepdog for Life or Relentless Defender.
He's not a Milton. Sorry, Sean.
Thin Blue Line, whatever, all that stuff. But it just, he knew. And I knew that he is an ex-con.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Maybe on parole, maybe not. But I know he'd done prison
time. There's a look in the eyes. There's a walk.
It was there.
Right.
And my dad kind of saw it. He didn't really get it. And then we hear this rumble, of 50 motorcycles coming up. Well, it was a Hell's Angel joint. And my dad wanted to stay and talk to the guys. And I'm like, hey, we're out.
We're done.
Interesting, the original guy that was there, he heard it. Yeah. He put his beer down, stood up, and left.
Yeah.
Because he knew.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to explain this to my dad. And my brother, like, well, how did you know? How do you know? I go, it's a vibe.
It's a vibe. Yeah, it's a vibe.
And if you're a crook long enough, especially if you're a good crook, you pick that up.
Yeah.
And you learn how to sense that vibe. Mm-hmm. And if you're a cop long enough, vice versa.
Right.
You know, and it just your attitude and the vibe that you put out can dictate whether or not it's going to be a use of force or if you're going to make the guy laugh.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know,
and so the drum that we bang about mindset comes from the training and stuff like that.
Yep.
Comes from your, we're talking about keeping up on your skills, because if you keep up on your skills, you'll have the confidence that when it comes time, you know how to do it. Mm-hmm. All those kinds of things come into it. But there's a last one.
Well, hold on, sorry. I don't mean to cut you off, but that's why when people come off with that bravado and I'm the tough guy. They have to put that on.
Yeah.
Because they're not ready. And
they
if I can scare them, either A, something to prove, or if I can scare them into submission, then we didn't have to go there.
Right.
You know, but the problem is, at some point, one day, you're going to meet the boogeyman.
Yep.
Yeah. And then he's going to test you.
Exactly.
You
know,
at some point, the devil goes down to Georgia and asks you to play the fiddle. Yeah. And so the last thing I'll hit on that, which is the mindset thing, because we were talking about training. Yeah, we agree. We talk about having the skills and not letting them perish, because there are, all that. But there's another component that we have overlooked for the last it's been a sad trend in law enforcement, is the selection and academy process.
Oh, we can't go there. We can't go there. We'll be here for another hour.
No, but I will say this.
Yeah.
Anybody that doesn't understand why you have to get yelled at in a police academy, anybody that doesn't understand why you have to get told you're a piece of shit maggot and kicked in the dick and thrown on the ground and made to do push-ups until your hands bleed and told that, one frickin' hair on your uniform means you're unsatisfactory, and go home and write me a 10-page memo on why hair is unsatisfactory on a uniform and all that. Same thing they do in the military, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. hopefully still do in the military. Stress, that tearing you down, that you know, you get screamed at, you get yelled at, you get all that stuff, and then guess what? At the end of the day, you go to the locker room, you take your uniform off, and you go home to your wife and your kids, and you work on your homework, and you polish your boots. And then you go back the next day, and they're nice as pie to you for 5 or 6 minutes. And then they treat you like absolute dog shit for 8 hours. And then you go home, mm-hmm. and you polish your
boots.
There's
a method to the madness.
You kiss your wife, and you do your homework, and you go back the next day. And slowly but surely, they get nicer to you and nicer to you and nicer to you. And then about halfway through, they turn into complete and fucking total assholes again, just to remind you that it can happen at any moment. And then by the time you graduate, you're so... hopefully inoculated against people screaming and yelling at you, getting in your face, having a problem, challenging your authority, challenging your ability, that you're stone cold. You're cold as ice inside, or hopefully are. So when you get to those calls, you don't have to freak out and go, oh my God, I got it. Better leave my knee on this dude's neck for 8 minutes because I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
Exactly.
And he's pissed me off. You go, okay, he's in cuffs. I'm going to laugh, sit him up. He's going to talk a bunch of shit. Mm-hmm. I'm going to chuckle. We're going to put him in the car, and then we're all going to go get some Code 7 and fucking a cup of coffee and move on to the next one. If you don't have that built in, the ability to disassociate or compartmentalize and say, this is not personal. This is a fucking job, and I'm not going to freak out because somebody's yelling and screaming at me. I'm not going to freak out because he's calling me an asshole, all this other stuff. If you're missing that, then all the rest of the dominoes fall. Mm-hmm. All of them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, you hit it.
You're right.
Absolutely hit it.
So, and then, you know, that's a big topic for us is hiring in academy is we haven't
dived into
we
it.
We haven't
like,
really,
head
like
first,
we dive into it a little bit, a bunch of times, but we've basically discussed the idea that there is a deliberate change in the hiring process to hire weak and docile cops.
Well, yeah. So it's like I had this conversation with a buddy of mine, not a cop. He was one of the guys on my powerlifting crew, and good dude. A little left of center, but sure. we need people. We need. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We can't have.
No, you can't all.
No,
like I said, you got to have somebody to hold the dog's hand and somebody to put a bullet in his brain.
Yeah, I heard you say mm-hmm. that on another one. But that's perfect, 100% yep. perfect. And, you know, he was talking about the kind of people that should be hired. I'm like, okay, what do you want? Because he was like, well, we need, you know, combat vets come back and be cops. I'm like, okay, you sure you want that? Because a lot of people are saying that, you know, we want people with just master's degrees to be policemen. Do you want that? Well, that would be good too. Which one do you want? Right. Or maybe we should get just somebody who's well qualified that has the personality and the life skills.
Well-rounded.
You know, just yeah. exactly.
A little bit of both.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, that's another thing. You know, a lot of these, the newer, especially when I was working as an FTO, I get these kids, and this is like the first job they've had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No life experience.
It's like, okay, none. You're 22 years old. You go into a house, okay, you go to a DV call, all right, or, you know, 415 family or whatever, and you got a house that's wrecked and nobody's hurt, but you have a couple there they've been married for 30 years. The guy's 50 years old. He's had a couple few, you know, drinks because he had a long day at work, and whatever reason, his wife said something that pissed him off, and now they're arguing again. And what's a 22-year-old going to tell that guy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, sir, you shouldn't yell at your wife. Shut up, dude. Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're right.
You have that challenge, and I'm not saying there are 22-year-old cops that are solid cops.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And they go into that situation and they listen to the guy. They do the right thing. They keep their mouth shut and they listen to the guy. Mm-hmm. And it's like, all right, hey, you know what? We got a call. We have to come check it out. Glad things are okay. Have a nice night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then you have the other one that
comes
in.
Don't fucking talk to me that way.
Exactly.
I'm the fucking police.
Exactly. And those are the people that we have to be careful about.
Yeah.
As far as hiring.
I agree.
So, and keep, because they'll get hired, they'll make it through the academy, and then we get them in the FTO. And a lot of the FTOs, they're afraid to put the hammer down on some of these people. And that's almost worse.
Yeah.
Because, I mean...
Well, because then you're allowing the behavior.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know, absolutely. It's interesting you're talking about that. Is I just read a proposal that a friend of mine forwarded to me, and so I'll give him a shout out because he introduced me to this interesting concept, or I should say phrase. It was something I didn't know how to put into words until I read it on the piece of paper. Once I read it on the piece of paper, I'm like, that's what I'm talking about. And it's like you were saying, you identify, like if you have a 22-year-old cop that with very little life experience, I became a cop at 24, mm-hmm. right? I think that's a pretty good age. But my parents got divorced when I was 8. I was cooking food and making dinner for myself at 12. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I graduated high school at 16 because I was done with it. And I started working at 16. And I had a lot of life experience for a 24-year-old that became a cop.
Right.
Right? Right. So when I went to my first DV 2 months on the job or 2 weeks on the job, 2 weeks on the job, Super Bowl Sunday, went to my first DV call. The guy's 65, his wife's 66 or 64 or whatever, and I'm 24, and they've been married longer than I've been alive. And, you know, my FTO's looking at me like, okay, kid, how are you going to fucking handle this? And when I got done, you know, she was in cuffs, and they were both totally fine. And he looked at me and goes, okay, cool, you know. And it was just, I had enough life experience to be able to respectfully address this elderly couple and listen to them, but also enough life experience to say, I get that. I will show you the respect that you deserve because of your years on this planet. However, you're going to show me the respect of what I've earned to be standing here wearing this uniform.
Sure.
And once we strike that balance, we're both good. So that is something that I was saying is when you find that 22-year-old cop, 23-year-old cop that can do that stuff, that isn't taught, that you can't teach. We used to call it the okey-doke, the ability to just talk shit to somebody for 15 minutes while you're waiting for backup to arrive and not have them get suspicious.
Exactly.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
The okey-doke. Just, oh, hey, man, what's going on? Da, da, da. And then all of a sudden the backup arrives and goes, turn around, put your hands behind your back, you're under arrest. He goes, what the fuck? We were just talking about, like, barbecuing 2 seconds ago. Mm-hmm. If you find people like that, the term I found is positive deviance. They deviate from the norm. Right? They're not doing the normal thing. They are deviating from what is typical, but they're doing it in a positive, beneficial way that has to be identified, cultivated, and then rewarded, and then taught or figure out how to talk to this person, figure out what they're doing, interview them afterwards, interview your cops and say, hey, you're 22. I don't know how you handled that the way you did. I've never seen a 22-year-old kid handle something the way you did. What was going through your mind? Identify those things, then screen for those things and develop some sort of a curriculum to start to maybe try and teach those things. Maybe take the kid who didn't have any discretion and it was just, you know, given orders his whole life. And now he's a cop because he had a squeaky clean background, but he has no life experience and no tact and no whatever. Mm-hmm. And put him with this guy and say, hey, teach him how to do what you do.
You know, how do you teach life experience in an academy?
No, you don't.
I don't think you can.
Yeah, FTO is where you're supposed to learn that stuff. The academy just teaches you the laws and the twist laws.
Exactly. And to see if, can you handle getting yelled
at? Can you handle getting yelled at? Can you shoot a gun? Can you drive a car? Can you learn these codes? And are you physically fit enough to do the job? Once they establish those things in 5 months, they put you out on the street, and then the real work begins.
Absolutely.
But if you don't cultivate, okay, here's one. How many cops do you know, without naming any names, how many cops do you know have admitted to you that they had to lie during the background process to get hired? You're both smiling, and nobody wants to say anything. I'm retired. I'll fucking straight up tell you. I flat out lied. I have a friend of mine. We talked about, I'm like, yeah, I did this before I got hired. And he goes, oh, I did this before I got hired. I'm like, you tell him? He goes, fuck no. I'm like,
Well, you brought up a good point a little earlier about, you know, the real thin line between the cop and the crook. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I've said this for a while. A lot of cops, a lot of the really good cops, they're just a bunch of dudes that never got caught.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
And they came out the right way on the other side.
They just chose to take a different path.
Like, never went out to hurt anybody. Probably just went out, you know.
Just doing dumb shit.
Just wanted to have fun. Right. Right. Always wanted to have a good time. And,
right.
You know, maybe some bad decisions, but never really got caught. But then, you know, a couple lefts instead of rights that they would have taken, they would have been.
Well, and you know, if you think about it, the CIA does that all the time. Mm-hmm. Right? you get people in the military, you get people in service, you get people taking tests, you get people taking psychological profiles, and they have mastered identifying characteristics for certain types of things that make people good field operatives. Mm-hmm. And then they go up to you and go, hey, want to go have some coffee? And then the next thing you know, they're asking how old you are, do you have a degree, what's your interest in, have you ever wanted to travel, you know, and all that shit. Because they have spent their the better part of half a decade or more learning how to cultivate assets, both for information out in foreign countries and here to work for them. Mm-hmm. So police departments need to do a better job at identifying and cultivating assets. Stop rewarding douchebags with promotions. Stop rewarding fucking master's degrees with captaincies. You know, start rewarding, you know, the squeakiest, cleanest, most ass-kissing fucker. Hey, Lieutenant, don't sit down. You'll break Officer So-and-so's neck. You know, stop giving them the FTO positions and start identifying the guys in your department who maybe do play it a little bit fast and loose, but God damn it, they're like... they used to call me Teflon. They're like, dude, nothing ever sticks to you. I'm like, because I know who I can tell the fuck off and who I can't.
But you know what? In the end, also, they're not stupid, because when they need you, they call you.
But that's the thing. And we let them do that.
That's the sad part. Right. Because I don't want to go on a tangent about that. Let's go back to what we were originally talking about. Is there anything else that you would like to add or something you want to elaborate
on? What's funny is we started talking about use of force, and we started talking about, you know, very specific, the carotid.
Right.
Okay, the carotid restraint. And then we kind of get into it. But then we wound up to who wants to be, you know, where are we finding these people that want to wear a badge and a gun?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it all stems from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it kind of revamping the – or looking back on the – last hour or so, should we be talking about the carotid, or should we be talking about the kind of person that should be getting police work?
You want to come back and talk about
or
it?
Both.
I
can.
You know, we'll get your dad.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get Elliot here.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about who should we be hiring. You know, let's get a vet, let's get a firefighter, and let's get a cop at least, and we'll have a panel. So,
and let's get someone not in this field.
Yeah. And we'll talk about what kinds of people should be in these positions. What, like, for example, if you're a citizen and you find out that one of the cops on your local department did cocaine once or twice in college, are you going to be pissed off? Or is it going to shock you and freak you out and say call for them to be fired? Or would you rather have the squeaky clean kid with zero life experience whatsoever, but because he has zero life experience, doesn't have a blemish on his record?
Solid question.
Mm-hmm.
Solid question.
I mean, And we actually, and we're going to put this out to our listeners too. Speaking of questions, because we're wrapping up here. Yeah. We got a message from one of our listeners on, I think it was the gram, but he's trying to put together a survey, I guess. And he wants to talk to, he wants to put us together a survey for both police and civilian, right? And so he was asking us as police officers, what are the kinds of questions we would want to ask the general public at large about law enforcement and what they want, or what they, you know. So that's one question, is what do you expect, what kind of a candidate do you expect to be hired? What kinds of people do you want us to hire as cops? I would say to, you know, this listener who's put, that's a question I would ask civilians.
That's a fair question.
Absolutely fair.
Because we work for them.
Yes.
You know, when the people, the state of California said, we want weed legalized, okay? We said, okay, cool.
Backed off it.
It's whatever. We don't care. Right. Tell us what you want to do.
Most
we'll
do cops
it.
At that point,
you know,
didn't give a shit.
Absolutely.
If you were cool to me, I let you keep the pipe and just put the weed under my heel. Does it?
If that, right. I mean,
sometimes get the fuck out of here.
Put that joint back in your ear, bro.
True. Yeah. No. Hey, you forgot to take that out of here.
Yeah.
But to kind of go back what we originally started talking about, I mean, there's going to be an issue coming up because of the loss of this tool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
We are going to lose. There are going to be more in custody deaths, guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This needs to get talked about on a bigger stage. This, you know, excited delirium needs to get talked about.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. you know, how to deal with excited delirium.
Meth psychosis.
Needs, absolutely. All of that. And one of the biggest tools that I've personally been able to use to combat that, to save these people's lives, is the carotid restraint. Putting mm-hmm. this person out. Right. Getting him restrained or her restrained. Getting that person medical attention right away. And unfortunately, the powers of the bee are—they're ignorant and they're just they're uneducated mm-hmm. on the subject matter.
I would say they're willfully ignorant. If they're police powers that be, if they're civilian powers that be, you're right. They need to be more. They need to put two and two together, because you're watching it every weekend on UFC mm-hmm. and not putting together that that's what's happening.
Yeah.
You're taking your kid to his jiu-jitsu class, and he's being taught the carotid restraint.
Yep.
And guess what? Your 8-year-old could probably climb on your back and knock you out faster than you could even tap, and you don't even know it.
I taught my daughter the rear naked choke when she was 5 years old, and she's every now and again she will still slam it. She will still put it on me. She's 13 now,
yeah.
And she'll still put it on me. She could still put me out. If I
wouldn't
want
to put it on you. My arm's not big enough to around your neck. Shit, I need two arms to put a carotid restraint on this guy. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show, and I appreciate you reaching out to us, man. It's been a blast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and it's kind of funny how these conversations just kind of take a life on its
yeah.
own.
Yeah, that's what the show is. It just evolves. We have people in to tell stories, and sometimes it goes weird places, and sometimes we look topics and stuff like that.
Other show we're talking about, we'll have you back on.
Yeah,
love to come on.
We'll make sure we have you on.
And then we try to dedicate an episode to some of our fallen brothers and sisters, whether it's police, firefighter, military, law enforcement, whatever. And so we usually, if you've listened to the show, we'll usually let our guests decide who they want to dedicate it to. Mm. So if you have somebody, we'd be happy to have you do it. If not, you know, John and I, it's sad to say, I wish one day we didn't have a list, but we have a constant list of people that we can dedicate episodes to, so we never run dry. But it seems like, again, sadly, in military, police, and firefighting circles, there's always somebody that knows somebody who has been killed in line of duty, lost their life,
Sure.
So it's up to you if you have somebody.
You know, for whatever reason, after everything that's taken place, the retired captain, I forget his name, and I'm not getting internet on my phone. I forget his name. He's the retired captain that was shot and killed.
Yeah, we've dedicated an episode to him.
Let's do it again then.
Yeah, because that is so ridiculous.
Absolutely tragic. I mean, we're supposed to break the retirement system.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And you know, cops.
We already don't live long past retirement.
Yeah.
So to have that shit done, it's unconscionable. And just for protecting a business from having TVs stolen, it was a retired St. Louis PD, I think. What was it?
David Dorn. Yeah.
Okay. That's who we're dedicating this again to him mm-hmm. because what happened to him.
Tragic.
Okay. Here's the thing. What happened to George Floyd is bad. It's mm-hmm. awful. But at the end of the day, he had a criminal record and he fought the police and shit happens. Okay. Now it shouldn't have, but it did. This police captain, he didn't do a fucking thing except try to protect his community. And he got gunned down on fucking social media. And
live.
Yeah. Live.
I think he was, he went there to help out
friend.
Yeah,
he did.
To help out his
friend. Whose store it was.
Yep,
he was going to help board his friend's store up.
That's it. He was just trying to protect the property.
For it, dude.
Yeah.
So that really, I mean, and there's been a lot of cops killed over this. And for whatever reason, that just kind of, that stuck out.
Yeah, I think the statistic is there's been 10 police shootings this year and 89 police officers shot. I think that's the statistic I read.
Yeah.
Now, the police shootings have gone down because nobody was out doing stupid shit.
Right.
But, so we'll do our little housekeeping because we could go on and on. Mm. You guys know where you can find us, Facebook, Instagram. There's also a new platform called WeMe or MeWe that I've been testing out. And for those of you who are like privacy people like I am, they don't have ads. They don't sell your information. They don't do all the stuff that Facebook does. Censorship, third-party ads, third-party information sales. So it's kind of like Reddit meets Facebook, where it's very anonymous and you can kind of do whatever you want, but you can still have your contacts. what I love, you, and I sound like a commercial for him, but hey, you could sponsor us, MeWe.
I was like, hey, MeWe, sponsor us.
Sponsor us.
We're pumping you up anyways.
No, when somebody contacts you, you can say, yes, I want to accept their contact, but I don't want them to see anything I post. So your boss wants to be your friend on social media, right, or your liberal cousin wants to be, and you just don't want to hear it. You just say, yeah, I will accept their contact, and they can message you and stuff, but the stuff you post will never appear in their feed, right? And they don't sell your information, and they don't use facial recognition software, and they don't have ads, and. So I'm trying that out. We may put up a page on there for the people that want to make the switch. We'll have a presence over there. And other than that, send John your Activision account if you want to play Call of Duty with us.
Get you guys on the regiment.
We'll get you on the regiment.
And linked up.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just bear with us because we both, you know, have lives outside of the podcast.
I know. Crazy.
I know. It is crazy. You could hear part of your life running around in the podcast today. You hear that?
Well, she's mobile.
Yeah, she is. So watch out. You now. I hope you, if you don't own a shotgun, just go get one from the department because now that your daughter's mobile, it's all,
dude,
it's all downhill.
Just wait.
Yeah.
Just.
With little boys, you have to worry about one penis. With little girls, you have to worry about every other penis.
I mean, I love my daughter. Greatest thing that ever happened to me. But this this raising girls thing is hard, man. This,
you know what I always said from the beginning, and maybe before she was born, I kind of wanted a son more than a girl, just because the whole like boy thing or whatever. But number one, I'm happy she is a female. I'm just enjoying this.
Yeah,
however,
daddy daughter.
Second of all, it was almost like when we did the whole the gender reveal that I didn't even know you're supposed to do until.
You were there.
That was at that point, right? At that point, I think, like, literally, when I saw the pink smoke, I'm like, God, I understand.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. This is you getting back at me right now. Uh-huh. I get it, and I deserve it.
This is the hardest thing I ever heard was, would you want your daughter dating a guy like you were when you were dating girls? And I went, fuck.
It's a harsh reality.
Yeah.
Well, with that being said, until our next episode, come home with your shield or on it.